This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the DRF Players Podcast. This is show 248, the June 27th, 2017 edition. The fun about this show is many times when we are conversing on the podcast, these are topics that we've at least touched on in other conversations. But since while over here for the last 10 days or so, instead of talking once or twice a day, we've been talking once or twice a week. Who knows? Maybe it'll lend a fresh tone to the tenor of the conversation. First question for you, and feel free at any point to divert and take over and start quizzing me about my Royal Ascot experience. But it seemed to me, the impression I got from our various texts was that you were one of the many Americans enthralled by the excellent NBC TV coverage, much of which I was able to check out on replay, obviously not able to watch it live. But it seemed like this year more horse players than ever were getting themselves stuck into what really is one of the great race meetings in the world. How did that evolve for you, and have you paid much attention to this meet in the past?
No, I haven't really paid attention in the past. I mean, I guess obviously I watched, when Frankel ran, I watched just that race. This is going to be weird when I say this, but when Verrazano was trying the turf over there, I watched that race. I was a fan of that horse. And then obviously last year, I paid attention with Tepin and Lady Aurelia running over there and following her from her debut at Keeneland. So then this year I was every day. I worked from home in the morning and I watched the entire thing. To the NBC coverage, I am an unbelievably big Nick Luck fan. From a professional standpoint, I think he's an unbelievable presenter. But I also think he's just awesome from a personal level. I've had a couple of chances to hang out with him, and I think he's great. And so I love watching him. And this new guy on ITV or whatever the channel is they kind of cut to, the punter guy who's always yelling and growling in the betting room is absolutely hilarious.
I didn't see any of that. Who is it?
I don't know his name. He's amazing, though. He's so funny. He's just always in the betting ring, like, you know, he's making fun of some guy that was standing in front of I don't know what they call that area where all the bookies are.
The pit.
He's making fun of some guy's outfit. That was a bookie. And then he was saying the best you can get now is 9-4, but over here it's 2-1. He was just showing that whole experience and. He was great. He was really, really funny.
Talk to me about your analysis of the races. Is this something, it seemed to me like in the past, you've just either followed the USA horses or relied on other people's opinions. It seemed like this time you were getting stuck into the form a little bit. How would you recommend for U.S. players interested in covering foreign racing to go ahead and do that?
Well, it's a lot of the same principles that we're used to, right? I mean, it's looking for hidden improvements, trying to find a performance that was better than the public thinks it was, or finding a performance that was worse, trying to find a horse or a situation that's going to be better suited on today than last time, or the opposite. And what I did was I was fortunate enough to have the ability to place wagers on some head-to-head matchups. And that's just kind of what I did. It was kind of my action. It's a pretty straightforward proposition. It's usually around a 50-50, sometimes a little bit less than that. And so that would allow me to kind of find some angles I was interested in and then to participate. So, and I also did some like wind dutching, which we've talked about before, where essentially if you're new to the show, I would bet three or four horses or two or three horses to get the same payout no matter what. So if it was an even money shot, I would bet $100. If it was a 2-1 horse, I would bet $50. And no matter what, I was going to win. Maybe that was a bad example, but you know what I'm saying. So
try to have a similar return betting across different possibilities. What were you using data wise?
I jumped into being big. You and I both are big Timeform US fans. I was obviously aware that Timeform US means that there was another Timeform before that, and so I hopped on to Timeform and just bought like their card for the day. And it's a little bit of a different presentation than what we are used to in our Timeform US, but at the same time, it's kind of the same principles. The numbers are very similar. A lot of, you know, they don't have like the pace things in there, but they do have some late pace figures that are involved, a finishing kind of a finishing number that can let you know how horses were coming home. And so I used that to kind of be my basic guide, and then I just kind of read through it. Probably one of my best opinions that I had was, and you're going to know who it is, I'm going to forget the horse's name. The horse that wired the field that had the weird that went really too fast in the Epsom Derby.
Yes.
You know who I'm talking about?
I do, and I'm of course spacing on the name now too. But give me a second; I'll come up with it. I mean,
just single name.
Oh, don't worry. Keep going. I'll look it up. Anyways, it's a horse we should know.
You know, he went. They said he went too fast in the last race in the big Epsom Derby, but he stayed on well. And speed seemed to be playing well at Ascot this week. You know, with the turf being firm, and he had some back numbers that kind of fit with the rest of the horses in the field, and so I think he was like 6-7-1, and he wired the field and ran well. So, I mean, I also had some really bad opinions too. I tried to beat some horses I shouldn't have tried to beat, but I will say this: it was a lot of fun watching just like a lot of like their superstars. This horse Caravaggio, I mean, oh my gosh, he's so much fun to watch. The Philly Winter was really exciting. You know, there's obviously our versions of some excitement with Lady Aurelia and Conte Partido, which was pretty interesting. I did have a little unluckiness we talked about. I placed a wager for Wesley Ward to have three or more winners of his eight runners. And I got Lady Aurelia, obviously. And then I snuck out Conti Partido, and I thought I was gonna find something else along the way, and I just couldn't find another one. But that was fun; it kept me interested in those races. So it was a blast. I really enjoyed it. I had a really good time watching it. It's a different than what we. It's different, you know. It's different from kind of our big days. I kind of like the fact that they only have six races, the six stakes races, or maybe a handicap here or there, but they don't load it with other situations. I think that's kind of cool. Makes it a little bit more special, but I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, it's fabulous. I mean, the 6-day race card is just tremendous. And it just, for me as a fan, is exactly what I'm looking for. You pay a slight price for it, you know, as much as it seemed like there were different biases to take advantage of on different days, it's a lot harder, as we know from turf racing in the States, to get great bias information when you're only seeing one or two races really run on the same exact expanse of ground during the day. But all in all, it makes it manageable. The feeling in the place, it's something I've seen a lot of people say, okay, this is going on my bucket list, and all I can do is just encourage that wholeheartedly for everybody listening and everybody watching at home. It's an amazing experience. Had a lot of fun. I was on with Steve Bick every day yapping about races there. Did a lot of posting for DRF Live. You mentioned a few of the performances who impressed you, that impressed you, Jonathan. If you had to pick one, if you had to pick one race in particular that that really got your motor running, which one would you go to?
Well, I thought Lady Aurelia was just absolutely spectacular. If you know anywhere that I can bet for her to win the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint going 5 at Del Mar, let me know now. I will take that. So the other thing I thought, the other race that I thought was a ton of fun, and it's a race style that we are not used to, was Big Orange winning that race, the Gold Cup, right. I mean, that was phenomenal. That was an exciting race. A lot of equine guts laid down there, and that's always fun to watch, and I thought that was great. So, the whole thing was great. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's just an interesting dynamic, you know? And like I said before, I mean this from the bottom of my heart, if I had to watch all of that on an ADW in standard definition, I promise you I would not have engaged the way that I did.
Just another example of how to, HD and the kind of coverage that NBC provided, it becomes a big thing for whole corners of the industry. Little note from before, I'm still struggling coming up with the name of that horse, even though I bet the horse too, and that's really bothering me.
It's Permian.
Yes, Permian, of course, who looked fantastic going out and showed it on the track. That was terrific. Our buddy Matt Bernier sends in that Matt Chapman at the races pundit, who's also not sure if he's still doing at the races now that he's got this ITV gig, but I had met him. I've met him in press rooms across the world, and I think that's the man you were meaning to compliment with his betting ring,
awesome.
Exploits.
Awesome. Next, he's so funny.
I'll probably see him at a race course somewhere along the line here, and I'll get to pass on your praise. One horse I didn't want the conversation to get away from ask it before we talked about was Highland Reel with that amazing performance in the Prince of Wales Stakes. I thought Ulysses was looking pretty good there for a minute in the stretch, and Highland Reel just showing what a game and push-button horse he is, and he's really developed a bit of a cult following now, I think, having stayed in training longer than a lot of the O'Brien superstars, and just how fast and how tough he is traveling all over the world and showing his form. Going to be very interesting to see. You'd have to think goal number one is to try to get him to go one better in the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe. But you got to wonder if a Breeders' Cup defense is maybe also on the docket for this horse, who seems to thrive on his racing as the year goes on. I do believe he is now the all-time leading money winner on the track for Team Coolmore, which is pretty neat. What did you think of that race?
Well, speaking of Team Coolmore, I love how over there they say they say the phrase he was born in the purple.
Bred to the purple, like, usually here, but maybe you could hear born too. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, I think that's really cool. It's just a really neat little saying anyway. So, no, I think he's great. I mean, he's such a gutsy horse. I mean, one of my favorite races of all time, and there wasn't very much drama to it, but the ride that they gave him in the Breeders' Cup last year, where they just said, like, look, we're not jacking around. We're better than you. We're better than the rest of these horses. And we're just going to run him into the ground. And that's what he did. He just opens up and just crushed them. And I love that race. And I love that ride. It got me thinking a little bit, and I know this is a little bit premature, and I don't even know how true this is, but I've always heard it, and I think that I've even seen it, like, using Google Maps. But Del Mar is the turf course is interesting because it's kind of more like a paperclip. It's got, like, some really kind of tight turns, abrupt turns, and I've always found that, like, horses that can move either in the stretch or on the backside, who make their move there, usually run better. So I think it's harder to pick up momentum there. And I don't know how that's going to suit a horse like him, kind of a big galloping, just grindy type. You know, I mean, maybe he'll still win by seven, and I'll be rooting for him for sure. But it'll be interesting to see.
The tactics are an interesting thing to underline with him. I mean, he's definitely a push button horse, so he can be on, he can be just off. But I think part of that ride that so many USA horse players loved in the Breeders' Cup, you can't forget part of what was going on there was team tactics. And they were team tactics that left Castellano understandably flummoxed. Because put yourself in his shoes on Flincher. You've got Highland Reel being ridden so aggressively, horse with all the serious form, had just a few weeks earlier run second in the Arc. Or you can go with him and then bring the stamina of a filly like Found into the race, the other Coolmore runner. I feel like Coolmore had that race over a barrel, how smartly it was ridden, because he was either going to, you know, if Flincher was going to press Highland Reel, Found's going to win. And if he sits off, well, you saw exactly what happened there. So it's interesting to see Coolmore not above, and there's nothing wrong with it, absolutely within the rules of racing, but I think not above some team tactics when it comes to some of these big races around the world. Just another 2 cents I had to throw into there. Anything else? What do you want to know about Royal Ascot?
I do want to know how hard it is to get a drink.
It's not bad.
Long lines?
No, it's not bad because there are so many bars. Well, and also let me emphasize this. I did it a little bit differently. I think the way to do it is if you have the time in your life and you're willing to do it, it's a go early, stay late kind of a situation. So I would get there because I had work to do too. So I was staying with my buddy Simon in South London and would just like get up whatever time I got up, 7:30, whatever it was, and just get out the, you know, get dressed and get out the door and get there. So I was able to be basically get there and have worked for, you know, an hour or two or three, and it was still 11 o'clock some days. So at that hour, you were still able to get a good table out one of the fancy bars. So we found this cool place. It was just Pimm's and champagne, and we were just rocking the pitchers of Pimm's Cup. So typically it would be me, Matthew Taylor from At the Races, Kevin Blake from the Final Furlong podcast, who's fantastic and one of my favorite racing pundits, a guy who I've known on message boards for more than 10 years, but had never had a chance to meet in person. And, you know, various crew of other people, Deirdre from the Final Furlong Pod was there as well, and had a chance to just basically just, you know, you go up and you take turns buying pitchers of Pimm's. And if you're starting there at 11 o'clock, you've still got, gosh, what is it? 3.5 hours until the first race. So there was a lot of socializing at that part of the day. And then a lot of during the day, it's 40 minutes between some of the races, but it happens. I can't quite explain this, but it just happens faster than it does. It feels faster than it does in the U.S. There's a lot of running around, especially if, like me, you're going out to the parade ring, the pre-parade ring, meeting up with various people. The time was felt so precious during the day that I didn't do much drinking. It was usually you have a few before and then sort of enjoy the day's racing. And then though the few times that I did want to get a drink, no problem at all. I found the one place, Woodford Reserve had sponsored a julep bar. So of course I couldn't resist getting a julep or two. You got to keep the cool Woodford, gold julep cup, which was neat. I bit my tongue very hard and resisted to tell them all the ways that I would have done the juleps differently. They were delicious as they were. There were just a few party fouls, at least to those people in Kentucky. The one I'll mention is one of the juleps was garnished with a slice of cucumber, and that's just a no-no. I couldn't bite my tongue on that one. I had to go tell them what was what. But, you know, there's places all over the course, so it spreads out the crowd. And then after party is huge. There is sort of famous after parties in the various parking lots where people are very proud of their tailgates. They'll be in their top hat and tails with their trays of cucumber sandwiches and bottles of various libations. I didn't see any Tito's, but, you know, you could always change that, JK. And then they do a sing-along after. Did you read the piece I wrote about the sing-along?
I didn't see it.
All right. The problem with DRF Live, I mean, it's awesome because it comes up right in the feed right when people are thinking about betting the races. So that's how we did it. But some of the stuff that I wrote, I think, deserves a little bit longer shelf life. Maybe I'll go ahead and do a little best of collection and post it on my old blog. And one of the things I think you'd be amused to hear about is that after the races, there's this big organized sing-along out at a bandstand in the back. There's a singer, a conductor, and like a little orchestra in this bandstand. And they sing old-timey, almost like folk tunes, and they sing pop tunes, you know, Daydream Believer and Hey Jude and things like that. And then it sort of culminates with this suite of patriotic songs. One of the funniest things, and I actually found it sort of like strangely moving, was one of the most enthusiastic crowd reactions to the sing-along was on New York, New York, a song that I have no idea how it got a bit of a toehold even in a UK sing-along, let alone to be the song that people got the most into. But people were super into it. And it's just an amazing scene. I mean, there were thousands of people at the end of the day crushed around this bandstand. So there's a lot of options to hang out and continue the fun after the races are over. So that was a very long-winded answer to your question. But yes, you can get a drink.
Can you stay in London and train in conveniently, or do you need to stay closer?
You can easily do it. I mean, I did it. I was staying in South London near Vauxhall, which is good. It took me, my day-to-day door-to-door was probably about 1:15, maybe an hour and a half if you take in the 15-minute walk probably that I had personally to do from the train station to the course, because I would have to like walk down to the far end to where, which was the only place you could get in with a press credential. So I mean, hour and a half coming out of London, not bad at all. It was starting to grind me out though because of two things. One, those first couple of days were incredibly hot, so it made commuting a bit more of a drag. And then also just, you know, the repetition of doing it day after day. I've actually started investigating some of the neighboring towns, JK. So if you and I head there together next year, I'm going to get a line on a really good place for us to stay. And maybe we can have, you know, 20-pound cab ride and eliminate some of the inconvenience. Most Americans, I think, coming over to do it sort of like as a bucket list thing. If you're doing it and you also want to do some London stuff and you're not necessarily going every day, staying in London, absolutely fine option. But I'm going to try to up the ante next year and get us closer.
I like it. Good planning.
We don't mess around, man. We don't mess around. But yeah, the social scene is amazing. The Royal Enclosure, obviously, is sort of like its own thing. That's really fun. I think the Anglophiles among us, if you're thinking of it like strictly as a bucket list item, gosh, I don't even know how you'd get in there at this point, but it's worth investigating for that. But I would say if you're more interested in it from a racing point of view, you can dispense with that. You get, you know, you still need to dress nice in the Queen Anne. I was suit and tie every day, but you know, that was sufficient. You can still get, if you're into the whole royalty thing, you can still get very close to the procession, et cetera. You can't necessarily jigger the shot. There's a spot in the Royal Enclosure where if you know what you're doing, there's a wise guy move where you can get your selfie with the Queen. You won't be doing that outside the Royal Enclosure, but you can still get plenty of that pomp and circumstance. And racing-wise, I don't think you miss a trick. You can get super close down in the parade ring and have a chance to see all these amazing, amazing horses from up close. And I basically just can't recommend it enough. I'll go ahead. I'll try to put together some pictures and some of the writing I did about it in a way that folks will be able to read for a little bit longer as we go forward. And then the only other UK racing note I had, oh, you had another question?
No, go ahead.
I was going to mention the other sort of wise guy move, the Monday after Royal Ascot, there's a meeting at Windsor, which is really just down the road, where it's obviously where Windsor Castle is. And it's a really neat thing. You get out of the train station, you walk to the right to the Thames, and there's a boat that takes you to the race course, and it's evening racing. And when I say evening, I don't mean night, I mean evening. It went from, I think it was 5:30 to 9:30 or 5:30 to 9:20, something like that. It stayed, you know, we're north here, so it stays light a lot longer. And just the atmosphere, I mean, amazing. In terms of racing, obviously, you're taking a huge come down from what you've seen at Ascot. But I would say for a lot of racing fans, Windsor is sort of a sleepy, interesting track that folks are going to want to check out.
Speaking of royal meetings, I'm going to be heading out to Royal Santa Anita on Thursday to see the real Queen Orcadia in the Eddie Logan suite. So I'm looking forward to that.
I think you just bought yourself some free drinks with that analogy. So that was good. That was very good. Tell our kitty I said hi. I will be missing not being out there at Santa Anita, but I know a whole lot of contest players are going to be out there. They have the triple play. Do you understand how it works, and will you be participating?
I am. Yeah, it's Friday is a $700 live bankroll. I believe it's 500 bankroll, 200 betting, but it could be 400, 300. You just check the website. I'm not 100% sure. Saturday and Sunday are their typical $3,000 tournaments, 2,000 bankroll, 1,000 entry. But the difference is there's a tournament on Saturday and there's one on Sunday. So there's three different events, which will be fun, kind of the lower roller version of what they typically do on Friday, and then the normal thing on Saturday and Sunday. So I'm really looking forward to that. I actually qualified for Saturday. I'm excited about. And I mean, how can I be at a better place for my 35th birthday than at Santa Anita on Saturday.
Ooh, oh, I didn't realize. We'll have you can send gifts, Jonathan Kitchen, care of Eddie Logan Suite, Santa Anita, 1130 Huntington Drive, Pasadena, Arcadia, California. Never mind. But no, that's very, very cool, man. I love it.
Right, but how should we? Here's the thing, though, Pete, and you're gonna be jealous when I tell you this. Should we? Here's the choices. Should we Din Tai Fung at the mall?
Oh, you're killing me.
And then go bowling? But you know why the mall is better than the other one? Or should we Din Tai Fung by the bowling alley and walk over to the bowling alley?
Oh, I think you got to go. It's so close. Now that we know where the new Din Tai Fung at the mall is and the fact that they have a full liquor license at that Din Tai Fung, I think you go there, you get dinner sorted, and then you Uber out to the bowling alley and you hope that Duke Matisse has had a good day and will show you all the cool, nifty bowling tricks that he's described before on this program. So that's what I would recommend.
Yeah, that'll be fun. I'm looking forward
to it. I'm sad to miss it. Not that I won't be doing wonderful eating. We're going to be heading up towards Scotland this weekend, going to try to go racing at Perth. I still want to also try to get to Hamilton Park, the race course near Glasgow. Susan has yet to rubber stamp this plan. We'll see if that gets going. Just keep trying to click these race courses off my personal life list. DRFT, hopefully we're going to be getting back in business with Santa Anita sooner rather than later. I'll tell you what, though, we do have lots of opportunities coming up. Every day DRFT is operational, where folks can feed in and or buy in to spots where they can win their way in to not only the Del Mar Handicapping Championship, one of the annual events of the season that Live Bankroll Players circle on their calendar and focus on, but also the Win Challenge August 4th and 5th at Wynn Las Vegas, two major events of the summer that DRFT are involved with. And then, of course, there is also the World Championship of Handicapping, a very successful program. Every operating day, put up 95, 1 in 7 win their way into the Grade 1 qualifiers. The next Grade 1 qualifier going to be July 8th, Stars and Stripes Day. I know a lot of people listening are going to want to be involved in that. Great way to get started now. Tournaments.drf.com. What else do you have on your horizon tournament-wise? You going to be playing in either of those?
Yeah, I'm playing. Well, I'm playing Santa Anita this weekend, and then I'm going to play Arlington Park the weekend of July 8th. I believe it's Stars and Stripes Day, but it's also Arlington Million Preview Day. Yes. And they have a good tournament. Illinois racing rules don't allow entry fees. That's why I love Hawthorne so much. Arlington Park's a $2,000 live bankroll with no entry fee. So it's just $2,000 bankroll. It's a great opportunity to qualify for the NHC or for the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge. So I'm gonna go there. And plus, I just love going to hang out in Chicago and see our friend Eric Bylett. So I'll do that. Then I am – this is where it gets really fun. Then I am Del Mar opening weekend just to hang out. Then I'm back in Austin. Then I'm Del Mar tournament, which is like the last weekend in July. Qualified for that on DRF tournaments. And then I am I'm going to an annoying person's birthday party in Saratoga.
We talked about that. So you're missing the win. You're missing the win for me. That's a sacrifice, and I appreciate it.
I am missing the win for you. I'm going to be playing vicariously. I've employed a person that we're going to split, so they're going to go and I'll just, you know, kind of chat via the phone of some ideas and go on, so on and so forth. And then Saratoga contest the week of. Pete, we probably need to talk to the powers that be. I know we've always done Saratoga qualifiers, and maybe we could start looking at getting that rolling again. I know we got a good relationship with them based on the Belmont situation, but their tournament is typically on a Wednesday and a Thursday. If you haven't ever played in that one, it's a ton of fun. It's a huge field, the who's who of all the tournament players. Hopefully it'll be a little bit cooler than it was last year. I don't know if I've ever been hotter in my life on that Wednesday and Thursday of last year.
That plan is tough, especially when you're inside when there's no wind. But, you know, we're due to have a good weather Saratoga. That's what I keep telling myself anyway.
Absolutely.
But one thing I'm hearing, you're leaving out your plans for the World Championship of Handicapping. Are you, you're so convinced you're going to be able to get all three of the maximum entries at the last minute here? You haven't been trying to feed in. Why don't you do some multi-tabling while you're running around the country doing all this other stuff?
No, you're right. I mean, I need to. Here's the thing, and this is going to sound, people might not like the way this sounds.
When that's the case with a lot of things you say on the show.
When it's low ratio and high dollar, I typically can do okay in those situations. I don't do good in the 200 people, 1 in 60. I don't do good in those. And so when that was the only way to qualify for certain events, I felt like I had to do it all the time because I needed to have that one special day. The great thing about the World Championship of Handicapping is you don't have to have a special day. You just got to have a day. And I just feel confident that I'll have a day, you know, and worst case scenario, I'll buy in. I know they've been doing really well. So I probably should do a head count of how many people have already qualified so that I don't end up in the cold. But no, I'll play. I was focused on with these live money tournaments coming up sooner. I've always done that. I just focus on whatever one is next. And I spend all my time and attention trying to qualify for that.
Fair enough, so but you don't want to miss out. Is all I'm telling you. There's this thing called multi-tabling, and I used to know a guy named Jonathan Kinchin who did it pretty well. So I wouldn't sleep too much longer as far as that goes. Let's talk a little bit more about racing in the U.S. We've had a bunch of questions about Yoshida come in, but let's put a pin in that and let's loop back. Stephen Foster and I, thanks to everybody who sent us kind words via email and Twitter. I guess we did okay with our selections we gave out on that show based on some of the success stories I've heard. Of course, I think a lot of people were more clever than us and managed to turn some of those opinions into some bigger money. But it was still a pretty cool night of racing. Reflect on some of the performances that you saw that night.
Yeah, I was alive for an obnoxious pick five. Like, I mean, the amount that, like, it was a very expensive pick five, but I didn't use the Roman's horse in the last leg. So that was a little bit frustrating. But no, that was fun. Gunrunner is some type of horse, isn't he? And I think that it's unfair, I think, at times, because really all I want to do when I think about how good Gunrunner is just say, oh, damn, how good is Arrogant? You know, it just makes me say that. And so I'm excited we're going to have those two. I believe we'll see Gunrunner win on your birthday, which will be fun. And go from there. So, but I will say this, though. I would imagine that one of these Bafferts will get on the plane and come to the Whitney. I don't know if it's going to be More Spirit. I don't know if it's going to be Cupid. I don't know if it's going to be Dan's and Candy, but he's got some good ones, and I think that some the B team will show up with Arrogant going down to the brig to grab some tacos and a Dos Equis.
I was hoping, as much as Arrogant liked Saratoga, that there's a chance we'd see him again, but it doesn't sound like that's the case. What are you hearing about the schedule for him?
I think it's in San Diego, and then the Pacific Classic, obviously, and then I would imagine they'll give him some like a quick little break. Run him at Santa Anita in the
Awesome Again.
What's it? Awesome Again, and then they'll bring him right back down south for the Breeders' Cup Classic, and then I would imagine this will be it, right? I mean, after he wins the Classic back to back years, and or maybe they'll stick around for the Pegasus again.
Hey, there's this new race called the Pegasus that he did pretty well in last year. I don't see why you wouldn't go for that again with the thought that, you could, part of the genius of that race and the timing of it is the ability to not lose a season at stud. So I wouldn't be too sure that the BCC will be the swan song for Arrogant, but going to be plenty of star power in Saratoga, even with him out on the West Coast. Obviously, very sensible decision with the Breeders' Cup Classic being run at Del Mar this year. So
I think that let's keep in mind, I think this Philly and Mare division is sneaky good. You know, I think that it's going to be an exciting little situation the rest of the year. We got obviously we still have Stellar Wind, and Songbird made a great account for herself. Forever Unbridled, who off of a really long layoff and off of some suspect decisions concerning her, like, you know, her well-being, like her health, like, you know, she was supposed to run here, but she didn't. Then she did. But she looked like a good thing winning at Churchill. And You know, Abel Tasman is obviously going to be a nice horse continuing to go forward. I'm probably leaving out someone good, and I don't feel that bad about it. But and then who knows if we can get Unique Bella back later in the year. It could be a pretty exciting distaff. I don't know if she'll be back in time for that. I saw an article that Hollendorfer said we can expect to see her back in the last quarter of the season. So I don't know if that would allow her to show up for a race like that. But definitely a great division. It should be exciting moving forward.
Not impossible. I mean, last quarter would certainly include a potential for a prep and a Breeders' Cup run. So that's a story to pay attention to and something to follow as we are now really on the precipice of the summer meets, as they are known, Del Mar and Saratoga. Tons of great stuff going to be going on, and excited to be a part of it no matter who shows up to the party. We did get a question also about the Kinshin Slam. I hope you can hear me rolling my eyes as I say that. JK, I'll let you explain what that is.
The Kinshin Slam. Well, it's just a little thing that woke up one day and decided I was going to do. And no, it's the most I couldn't have got any luckier. I mean, I didn't even bet IRAP on Saturday, to be honest. I bet Gervin. So I'm dead serious. I don't know if you saw the race beat. It's like a really, really tough photo. It's the nastiest camera angle in racing. I mean, they're probably like, it feels like the camera's in the 16th pole, like filming the wire. And the whole time I needed Gervin in a bet. I was like, oh, come on, give me Gervin. And then I thought to myself, but wait. it's like the best hedge ever. I'll lose this bet, but I get to make up something called the Kinshin Crown. and then I felt like one of those situations where you have two horses in the pick four and they're both paying about the same, and they're in a photo, so you don't really care who wins, and that's kind of how it ended. So when they showed IRAP, I was like, yeah, whatever. At least I'll go down into fantasy draft immortality.
I thought we were going with Kinshin Slam, not Kinshin Crown, by the way. That's a little too obnoxious and full of yourself, even for you.
Oh, actually, I already hit the Kinshin Crown, so this would be the Kinshin Slam. You're right.
Exactly. You had the Kinshin Crown when three of the five of your fantasy draft horses, different ones, won each leg of the Triple Crown, much to the chagrin of Chris Larmy, Matt Bernier, and myself. And then, of course, off the bench, ERAP with Ohio. Now, who was the fifth? Do you even know this? Who's the fifth member of your team, and what race are they going to win for? I don't know. We're going to have to get out of thesaurus and come up with what we're going to call that one.
Well, unfortunately, it's a horse by the name of Reach the World that...
I wouldn't have even brought it up had I known. The ill-fated Reach the World. Well, that's sad. That's not so good. That wasn't where I was hoping that was going to go.
But I will say this. I got unbelievably lucky. This is like better than like the pick four I hit in 2012 of like luck. Like I thought like, okay, well, Always Dreaming can probably win the Derby. I guess Cloud Computing is going to skip the Derby. He could probably win the Preakness. And Taprit seems like the kind of Todd Pletcher horse that can win the Belmont. And just like, I got unbelievably lucky. And if you didn't trade me, it wouldn't have ever happened. So thank you.
That's right. That's right. It's really that makes me. I was already feeling terrible about this, JK, and now I feel even worse. We did trade draft order, so I could get. I was torn between two. I don't even remember why I did it anymore. Maybe I was feeling Irish War Cry that day. But it worked out pretty nicely for you. Let me tell you this. We'll have revenge in some form of bet. You will end up buying dinner at Saratoga once again, as we made you have to do last year. So this isn't over. We're just gonna take a little break from betting until we come up with something where the rest of us can really get a clear edge and punish you as you deserve to be punished.
Fair enough.
Let's talk Yoshida. We've got multiple questions about him. Folks wanting to know if at this point we consider him in a heads up. You were the one talking about head to heads before. That is a very difficult question to answer, not knowing who exactly is coming over yet for his next race, which I presume is the Belmont Derby. Is he a horse that you like enough that you think about taking in a head to head against whichever European runners decide to grace our shores?
Oh, no, I'd have to see first. I mean, I think he's special, right? But I think that's betting with your heart a little bit too much. I got to see who shows up. I mean, if you didn't watch Ask It at All, then you might not know of a gentleman by the name of Aiden O'Brien. And if he brings one over here, that could be a problem. So, but I think Yoshida's special. And depending on the price and depending on the scenario, you know, how are they going to ride him now? Are they going to ride him forward like they did for the maiden score, or are they going to take him back to last like Joel did last time? I think it's going to probably be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, that's probably the right move. Let the race tactics and race design dictate that to some degree. I think I'm a little higher than you are. I mean, simply because I agree, the word special comes to mind when I think of Yoshida. The O'Brien, you know, B-minus team potentially that would come over here, my gut would be in a head-to-head, you're going to be able to get Yoshida as a dog. Now, it's kind of silly really hypothesizing about this before we have more specifics, and we'll talk about it again. Hopefully we'll have a show that previews the race specifically. We'll talk about schedule a little bit later as to what we think we can do over the next couple of weeks. But from here, the idea of an odds against Yoshida against the best Euro who's going to show up, I might sign for that, honestly. But you know, your more prudent course of action might be the wiser one. But I think this is a horse who I'm going to probably end up betting. If it ends up being him against some O'Brien as a short price or whatever, yeah, that's where betting with the heart would come into play. But from what I'm guessing the relative prices would be, it seems like an interesting thing. You asked me a great question about Aiden O'Brien, by the way, the other day when Ask It was on after one of his runners yet again went on to impress. I don't know if it was September at that point or one of somebody on the last day. And it was a very simple question. You said, do people hate him? I thought that was a great question, just because when you're dealing with people who are so successful, and we see this in the USA with Baffert, with Chad Brown, with Todd Pletcher, you know, there is a certain amount of resentment that can build up amongst some quarters of the industry. Other people appreciate their accomplishments, appreciate them as human beings, and look past any feelings of petty bitterness. But now, I don't know. I haven't talked to a ton of English and Irish horsemen, but I will say that I did notice the following. On one of the days at Ask It, one of the days of the Ward winners, Wesley Ward wins. They announce it after the race. Big cheer from the gathering throng. Aiden O'Brien won a race. Business as usual. They announce it. Everybody goes back. I think it's one of those things where it's just become so common, maybe, that it doesn't draw the cheer. But it did make me wonder if you might be onto something with that comment. What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. It's like, this is listening to him in the post-race interviews, and I don't know, and this is going to sound really funny, I don't know if it's the accent, I don't know if it's the culture, but he seemed so humble and so gracious that, like, I felt like, God, people must love him. Or, like, he seemed like a very sweet, gracious man. And don't get me wrong, I have no problem with Todd, Chad, or Bob. I think Bob's hilarious. I think Todd's funny. You know, Chad's a little bit dry, but whatever. They do come off as a little bit as if they know they're really good. There's not like this crazy sense of humbleness from them. It's not offensive. I'm not like offended by their opinion of themselves, because it's all earned. But maybe, like I said, maybe it was just the accent. But Aiden seemed so like humble and like kind of like this sweet little, you know, like very gracious, you know. And I was wondering, I wonder if people like him or not. So that's what made me ask the question.
I'll ask more around. But, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people who've cashed a lot of tickets who love him, especially on the Irish side of things. Maybe I'm harshly judging things like facial expression, but he doesn't seem as warm and fuzzy to me as you're describing him. He seems like so many successful people, just like hyper focused, which is exactly how I want the trainer of the horse that I'm betting on to be. Or, you know, another guy, I'm not saying O'Brien is like this, but just to make a cross sport comparison, Bill Belichick. This is a man who does not come off as a man that you would have a pleasant conversation with in regular life. Is that, that'll be as politically as I'm going to go ahead and say that. But
I actually disagree.
Well, please go ahead.
I think that Bill Belichick is right. You get him away from football. If football's involved, you got no shot. But if you can get him away from football, I think he's a charming, funny man. I've actually seen him on a couple of like talk shows, like after he won the Super Bowl, like in the two or three weeks before he turns into a maniac again. But I think if you involve football, you got no shot of getting anything pleasant from him.
What I see the same is that idea of like the intensity of focus bordering on the maniacal. Now, I know you've dealt with a lot of famed football coaches over the years from back in your coaching days. You haven't had any, you didn't ever see him speak or have any personal dealings with him?
No, I never saw him at all. You see a lot of guys that impress you a lot of guys that are very underwhelming, that you were expecting to be much better, which was, it's like, golly, as many games as you win and as like sharp as you come off, like you're not that sharp. So that part was a little bit shocking. I will say this about Ask It while we're talking about, the Aiden O'Brien thing. I mean, if I could go back, and no offense to my grandparents, but God, I would love to have John Gosden be my grandfather. He's like the sweetest man I've ever, he did this interview. He was like the nicest man in the world. He's like saddling. If you try to talk to like one of our traders while they're saddling, imagine like trying to talk to Maker while he's saddling a horse. I mean, he was so sweet and like just gracious. And oh my gosh, the British people are just so much more polite than we are.
Well, I got to check out more of this coverage. It seemed like you had a really did a great job, and you really enjoyed it. And I've loved the little tidbits that I've seen here and there. And hopefully, that's just something that's going to continue to expand. Here's my project. Oh, you go ahead.
The one that we do have to talk about, and I hope you saw it, or maybe you haven't, but I'm sure you at least know what I'm talking about. How they handled the inquiry. Or the steward's inquiry. Did you see
it? I saw people raving about it. I did not see it. So explain it to me.
Well, they have a camera, and they brought all three jocks that were in question. I wish it was a better inquiry, right? The inquiry was kind of silly. There wasn't much there. I mean, I wish it was like the Byron inquiry with the three jocks in the room with Mike Smith on shared belief, Martine or Banjo, whoever rode Byron. And then, like, whoever else got eliminated. Oh, Moreno, who I guess was probably Luis Saez or somebody. But essentially, they sat them all in the room, and the steward asked them questions individually with them all looking at each other with the public seeing it. Our jocks get on the phone. We got no idea what they're asking. We have no idea what the jocks are saying. And it was great. Like, the guy asked Ryan Moore, what happened? And Ryan said, he came into me. I came out a little bit. I was getting third no matter what. It was almost like a Sopranos, I'm not going to snitch thing. It was great though. It was. I mean, and he was telling the truth. I mean, he was getting third no matter what.
Pretty funny.
Unbelievable view into what's going on during an inquiry. And I think that it would be good, in this, with all the technology we have, I think it would be great because I think that it gives people a real perspective on what's happening. I think that they do know the camera's on, so they probably don't say, what they want to say in there to a certain extent because of owners and stuff like that. But I still think that it's at least more transparent than what we deal with now.
Well, yeah, the way they handle inquiries here on the course is nuts. The measure of the foul most of the time is how close it is in the finish. If the horses finish a couple lengths apart, you'll almost never see a DQ here. Whereas something minor, but they finish a nose apart, they'll make a change. And I hate that. But what I will agree with you on for sure, I mean, I've always said on this show, I kind of believe a foul, you need more consistency in the rules and you need more transparency in the rules. And anything that leads to that, and having them have to be accountable for what they say in that meeting, to me, even if politics enter into it a little bit, I don't think that's a bad thing. That's really that's very interesting, and something else. I bet I can find the I bet I can find the tape of that. Somebody probably posted that somewhere because I heard so many people raving about how it was handled. So thanks for that. Unfortunately, I didn't make a note about the next thing I was going to say. These are the perils of being out of my normal Brooklyn bunker office and in this unusual place. What were we talking about right before that? Do you remember?
Yoshida?
Well, we do need to go back to Yoshida a little bit, I think, if only to confirm the question that was asked of us. Who is it who asked us this question? Darren asked us if we knew definitively where Yoshida was going to run again, and also wanted us to share any other. It's a good question, but probably one we can't answer right in the here and now. Any other recent maiden breakers we've seen who have that same kind of potential? So Belmont Derby for the first part of the question. That's confirmed, yes?
Yep.
And how about this? Any other eye catchers who you've seen recently that might go on to be maiden that might go on to be stakes winners?
That's funny. There's a horse that we talked about before the show that I said I kind of wanted to mention. Baffert had a horse on Sunday named Serengeti that ran that. I mean, he won like a good thing, and he buried another horse that I heard that the O'Neill Barn really liked. I mean, buried the horse. He got a 75. He won by 11 going five at Santa Anita, which I thought was, you know, pretty impressive. I mean, winning a stakes race. I mean, a 5-furlong race by 11 is something special. So, you know, he's obviously in good hands, and I think he could be one that could go on to be something special.
I like it. Well, there you go. I didn't know we'd have an answer to that question, and JK does. So good stuff there. Let's talk about our schedule coming up. I'll have to be very honest. Friday, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm making my way from London up to Edinburgh. The odds of having a solid connection, not very good. But what about next week? Maybe we can try to get do a Tuesday Friday double, just because Stars and Stripes, it's such a big deal. We've got the two big qualifiers on DRF tournaments that weekend. You up for possibly skipping Friday, but doing a normal schedule next week and thereafter? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it works for me.
Good. Very easy. That's good. That's what we like to hear. Should be fun, and hopefully have some more entertaining racing stories from abroad and some more horses and stuff we could pick up on. Any other? I didn't watch a thing in the USA this weekend. We talked about the Ohio Derby. Anything else? And we talked about Serengeti. Anything else happening that I should be aware of? Anything else entertaining happened to you at the windows?
No, I think it was just kind of calm before the storm. It's starting to pick up with the summer racing, and so I'm trying to even think if anything. Battle of Midway came back and won like a good thing, which was interesting. And Baffert added to his triple digit buyer older male horse stable with a big win. I don't know what the buyer was, but I'm thinking it was 110 plus at least. And I saw the funny. The very, very funny. I don't know if we've ever talked about this before, but the very, very funny POTUS Capper Twitter account. You've seen this, right?
I have seen it. I've even made some gentle inquiries to try to figure out what the source of it might be after I was suggested as a possible person behind the account, which is, of course, not in fact the case. But, yeah, there's some funny I haven't been doing much retweeting, you know, for various reasons, but I have read some of it, and it's amusing. What was the one that got you?
I predict Baffert's next stakes winning horse runs a buyer of 224.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Oh my God. I almost fell down when I read this.
Maybe if POTUS Capper is listening, you could get a vocoder. You could come and do a little guest spot on the show. We promise we won't reveal too much. And what about betting wise? Was it all about Ask It For You, or did you wade? And you told us about your Ohio Derby situation that didn't work out so well financially. Anything else? Anything else going on as far as that goes?
No, I just had one of those weekends where, like, it wasn't anything special, right? I mean, I didn't like change the world or change my life, but it was one of those weekends where, and I know people have had these before, I wasn't really doing anything different. It's just the things I thought were going to happen happen, and they just don't. They just don't usually happen. You know, you think that something's going to happen all the time, it never happens. So that worked out in that way. You know, nothing special. Like I said, just horses where, like, I look at the paper and I say, I don't see how this horse loses. The horse goes off at 2 or 3 to 1 and wins. And then it happens again. I don't see how this horse loses 2 or 3 to 1 and he wins. Because literally 96% of the time I say that and the horse finishes like last. You know, I'm all in at the half mile pole and I'm like, I don't see how this horse loses and I finished last. So it was a non-frustrating weekend is the best way I can describe it.
I like it. I'll take non-frustrating anytime. I managed to dig myself out of a hole on Friday at Ascot, and it's fun here, man. The different betting options through friends have been able to get involved and get some money down on the betting exchanges, which is just a superior way to bet for so many reasons. Not to the exclusion of USA Exotics, which I think have their own place for sure. And they're actually really fun to mess around with USA style exotics with the big pools you're going to have in the exacta and trifecta pool for a meet like Ascot. But to have for your main betting, to be able to know exactly what price you're getting, to be able to do the kind of fun and complicated dutching things you can do, and ended up doing some sort of make my own pick three stuff between exchanges and bookmakers and the bookies here. That's its own world too, and fun to be able to try to find people offering specials. You know, the Caravaggio, you could get a Caravaggio winter double at 9 to 4 in places. You know, the raw math on that, I think, ended up being under 2 to 1. If you just rolled it over on the betting exchange, and that's with a 5% take ending up being under 2 to 1. So to be able to amp that up to 9 to 4, you know, there's good value available. And it's these betting markets, parimutuelly, it's a little tricky. The take is very high, but if you can find a way to wade into these pools and take that edge and let the bet takers have and lessen it. Am I being political enough here? That I definitely recommend people pay attention to those kind of bets on the racing over here. It's a lot of fun, and I will miss it surely when we get back to Belmont Park and Saratoga coming up. But super fun stuff. All right, JK, I think we are just about at the end of episode 248 here of the DRF Players Podcast. Any closing thoughts or things we forgot to talk about before we wrap it up here?
Not that I can think of. Holler at Nate Newby if you want to get out to Santa Anita. If you're kind of new into the tournament situation and you don't want to take the $3,000 dive on Saturday and Sunday, it's perfect. I think Nate was really smart and doing kind of this middle of the road, smaller, you know, $700, not that $700 is nothing, but compared to 3000, it's obviously significantly less. So, if you want to get involved, holler at Nate, you can just show up and play. You don't have to sign up ahead of time, but, it's always,
they don't close.
I think if, right. Yeah. You can sign up as long as you have like four or whatever it is, if you got to bet four races, you can show up in the fifth and sign up and bet the fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. And still be good. So if you got to work on Friday, you can still get out there late. You don't got to be there at 9, 10, 11, 12 a.m.
Three contests this weekend, so that's a great chance for folks looking for multiple opportunities in the same weekend. And I expect many of those players to be multi-tabling on DRF tournaments. Hey, have you seen this new, really quick, high roller tournament DRFT's been running for the win, where it's put up 290 and 1 in 10 win the grand prize of the $2,500, the $2,000 win seat and $500 travel. Now, I know it's not relevant for you because you got to be in Saratoga that weekend, but maybe whoever you're consulting with should try to get a second entry that way.
No, I love it. I mean, that's great. Those are the best to me. I like the low ratio. It takes out a lot of the things that people complain about in tournaments. When you play in the higher dollar amount, lower ratio situations, you eliminate them. That 70 to 1 shot that wins that you couldn't find if someone gave it to you, It doesn't usually crush you because there's only, you know, 15, 16, 18, 24 people in there. One person has it. Two people can go. You know what I mean? So it's I prefer those. You can just pick winners. And so I like that one a lot better.
Take a look. I expect we'll see one of those this coming back this weekend.
One more thing. I know we're over 30 seconds. If you watch Out of the Gate, the name that they just kind of gave me was Kenshin's Corner, and which is fine. But I realized that no one said anything, but I just realized that oh my God, my buddy Tom Quigley's got Quigley's Corner and I got Kenshin's Corner. Like I got to do something different. Like I'm copying my guy TQ. Next thing you know, I'm gonna have a Hawaiian shirt on, I want
slightly different haircut as well.
Yeah, slightly different. I want a new name. So if anybody has any ideas, tweet me or Pete or send me a DM or you can email the podcast at drf.com. I just can't think of any. It's hard to come up with a name like with your name, and it feels really kind of corny.
Jonathan, so let me know. Segment for Out of the Gate. Hit us up on Twitter, email podcast@drf.com as you can with all of your questions and your information about aisle jacking. I have had some good ones since I was over here. Cultural difference, I suppose. But that's all the time we have. I want to thank Jonathan Kitchen. I want to thank our substitute producer, AJ, for pushing all the right buttons. Most of all, I want to thank all of you for listening. We are going to skip Friday. We are going to be back a week from today. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos.